You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
Today we are canceling the apocalypse!
Welcome to Unscripted Parenthood. I'm Anthony Lewis, joined with Aurora Bubbaloo, and we are here to review some more parenting films. I believe the catchphrase I put on the the art for this says raising kids and reviewing movies. Maybe I should just say that at the beginning.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm working on a... Okay. let's try it again, everybody. I don't even know. I may leave this in. Who knows if it's funny or not. Welcome to Unscripted Parenthood, reviewing films, raising kids. It's Anthony and Aurora, and we are back to talk yet another film about parenting or parenthood. Mm-hmm. Apparently, according to Google, one is sillier than the other.
Yeah.
Parenting opens up the door to just all sorts of wackiness and silliness, but parenthood is very serious business. So today we are kind of straddling the line, I think. This is considered a dramedy, what we are reviewing today, the 2007 film Juno. And I would say that it leans more towards drama than it does comedy. Like, the comedy in this movie, with the exception of the beginning, I would say, like, the beginning of this movie is weird to me because it almost feels like a different movie. And maybe that's on purpose.
It does. But I would say that I was not expecting. I've watched this movie multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the story. I know what's going to happen, all of it. And for some reason, but I haven't watched it since I became a mom.
Yeah.
And I cried so much in this movie.
Oh, yeah. I cried. I
cannot believe that I cried so much.
Yeah, I didn't cry during Knocked Up, but I cried like three or four times during this.
Oh,
yeah. So this is starring Elliot Page and Michael Cera and Jennifer Garner, Jason Bateman, Allison Janney, and J.K. Simmons. And this was written by Diablo Cody and directed by Jason Reitman, who I did not realize directed this movie until I unlike you, even though I had a copy of it on digital video disc, I have not watched it since maybe 2008 or 2009. It has just been...
God, you know what? I also have it on DVD.
Do you? I haven't been...
Yes.
Do you have the one with the slip cover with like the orange Tic Tacs on it?
Yes.
That's what I got.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have not watched it since I got it on DVD, which is a shame because I wonder if part of me thought like it didn't hold up well or whatever. I don't know. I watched it and I thought it was beautiful and fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I knew Jason Reitman has been in my mind lately because he did Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that. And then when I looked to see like, okay, what else did he do besides this in Juno? He also did Thank You for Smoking, which I thought was an amazing movie.
And it is.
And Up in the Air, which I also thought was a good movie, but I haven't watched that since like 2009. But I did like it. And...
Oh, I want to watch Thank You for Smoking again.
So,
thank you for reminding me of that movie.
All I could remember was... Like, there's all this talk about Diablo Cody's writing style and, like, how she would have this penchant for, like, weird words or weird sayings. And for some reason in my mind, I thought they were strewn throughout the movie. But they're not, weirdly enough. They only seem to exist, like, right at the beginning of the movie. when Juno will say stuff like, what the blog? Which is, like, something that nobody said then and definitely nobody says now.
No.
Nobody used blog in that sense. Although there was
But I feel like Juno has other lines too that are kind of like out there.
Oh,
she will throw like, you know, lines in there in a conversation.
Yeah. So I think like the movie is funny, but it's funny in a way that is that it doesn't feel like a comedy. It's funny in a way like your friends are funny or, you know, your siblings are funny. Or
that's exactly it.
It felt naturally funny. It didn't feel like a comedy setting up bits or whatever. Like Knocked Up definitely was structured more like a comedy. So this felt way more dramatic in that sense. So the idea, the story of this movie is that Juno sleeps with her boyfriend, Polly Bleeker. And the beginning of the movie is her deciding, because presumably prior to the cameras rolling, she was feeling some kind of way and thought maybe it would be best to take some pregnancy tests. So she goes, and I don't know what kind of money this kid's got, but she bought like a lot of pregnancy tests. And also, I got
And they are expensive.
Yeah.
They're super expensive.
Yeah. Also, Dwight from The Office works at the at the convenience store, and he also talks in a way how like no humans talk. Like,
it's he has just a part time from The Office.
Yeah, it's just like a really weird. His lines. He just says things in a way that like people don't speak to one another. Mm-hmm. It's just it's weird how people were like that at the beginning of the movie, and maybe this was on purpose to kind of have this whimsical sense, but then have reality crash down on her when she finds out she is pregnant. But anyway, her idea is, because of course to take a pregnancy test, you need a urine sample. So her idea is just drinking a gallon of Sunny D, which I don't know how she did that. I actually don't hate Sunny D, but I couldn't drink a gallon of it to save my life.
Yeah, I used to drink a lot of Sunny D when I was younger, but I tried it as an adult and I was like, why was I drinking this?
Yeah. I mean, once I had like, and I know Sunny D is not supposed to be orange juice. It's just an orange flavored drink.
Right.
But like once I had real orange juice, or even something that's like simply orange, I can't drink orange juice concentrate. I can't drink Sunny D. I can't drink orange pop. Nothing. Like, it all tastes too weird to me now.
Yep.
Anyway, that's a very weird sidetrack. So she gets pregnant, and she ends up telling her parents, by the way, are amazing. Alice and Janie and J.K. Simmons are her parents, Bren and Mac. And she decides, at first I think she decides, she is going to have an abortion. And she goes to an abortion clinic, and there's like a friend from school doing like a one person, like, I don't know, protest or whatever. Yeah. I was reading, I don't know if these were criticisms of the movie, but maybe they were. A lot of people seem to take this movie as a, like an anti-abortion movie. And
I see.
And I don't think that's what this was at all.
No.
If anything, you've got like the one protester outside, and she's a classmate of Juno. And she doesn't even seem particularly smart or well. Like, she's like, babies need to be born. And like, born isn't even a word.
I mean, the fact that the movie showed a teenager seeing abortion as an option for this, it's already pro, you know,
and Juno kind of blows. And Juno kind of blows her off anyway.
Yeah.
It's when she gets in there, and she's just sitting, and she just gets really like something inside of her tells her that this isn't the route she wants to go, and that doesn't make it anti-abortion at all.
He makes it pro-choice.
If anything, it is a choice. She decides not to. She considers it and decided not to. Like, they definitely portray it as she is anxious and uncomfortable in there. And I think some people took that to mean, like, you know, she knew it was wrong to do it or something. Yeah. But it's never discussed after this point. And the reason
I kind of saw it differently, because I see it as that's a very uncomfortable thing to do.
Yeah, people think so this is the thing. I have not personally, obviously, for many reasons, actually been through an abortion, but I have been with somebody who has been through one, and I have been in that place. Like, I don't know how people think. People who are pro-choice are. Like, I don't know if they think this is like, you walk in and they're like, oh, you're having an abortion. Let's have an abortion party. Right, like, it is not like that at all. Like, this is a tough decision. It's a decision that people have to live with. Some people struggle to live with it. People often regret it, even if it's the right thing to do.
Right.
It's, you know, it's not easy. It's not celebratory. It's not fun. You know, people don't treat it like that. People treat it like a serious medical decision and something that will affect their life going forward in multiple directions. She's just in there and she's just like, she's I don't want to do it.
She's a teenager too.
And she's by herself. The fact that she even considers it makes it a pro-choice movie in that sense.
Yep.
But furthermore, of course she would think about that as an option. Because she's a high schooler. She's by herself. If she goes through with the abortion, the movie can't happen. So, you know, like the dead and the movie's over. You know, you can't do that. So, of course, there had to be a reason why. And she decides that she doesn't want to do it. She's going to go through the birthing process. And then she's going to give up the child for adoption. And that never wavers. That's her stance through the whole movie from that point on until the end of the movie. So,
which is also, you know, something that I will point out in this movie. That's very mature.
Yes.
That's a very mature decision for a teenager to make. Because just like abortion is not an easy decision, giving up a baby for adoption is not an easy decision either.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of mental fortitude to be able to do that.
Absolutely. So she ends up telling Polly what happened, but also like what she's planning on doing. And they kind of go their separate ways, I think. Because I think maybe she thinks that he looks at her differently, or maybe he doesn't want to be around her now, or, you know, for various reasons, they kind of don't spend a lot of time together. And the movie more focuses on her finding prospective adoptive parents, which she does find in a newspaper article. And the prospective parents are played by Jennifer Garner and Jason Bateman, Vanessa and Mark Loring. And they're a pretty well-to-do couple that seem to live in a really nice home in a really nice part of the state. I guess they don't even live in the same town. I guess she has to drive to get there. But she, Jennifer Garner's character, can't have children, I believe. But she really wants, like, it's all she wants to be. She just wants to be a mom. And Juno likes them. And then once she's like, you guys got it, like, you're it, the process sort of just then follows her through the going through the stages of pregnancy. But she also, as she spends time around the Loring, she spends more time around Mark, because Vanessa's off at work. And Mark does, like, he's a musician, but he does, like, jingles or whatever for commercials. So he mostly works from home, but he used to be in a band and they played like punk music or whatever. And he's into horror movies. And Juno is like, oh, we got a lot of stuff in common.
He's into everything Juno is into.
So they're kind of hanging out a lot. And this is the one thing that I really forgot about this movie is how creepy that is.
So inappropriate.
Incredibly inappropriate. And it only gets worse. And it gets worse. It gets worse because Juno does not Juno's just like, this is a cool guy. And we're just hanging out and we're friends. And like, I'm going to give him and his wife a baby and they're going to be so happy.
She is a minor. Yes.
She's in high school.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a pregnant minor.
Yeah. So, and it becomes pretty clear at one point that Vanessa really, 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 this is all she wants. She's so happy. Mark, though, okay, you know, if it happens, cool, I guess. It becomes pretty clear that he's not happy. he loves horror movies and he loves punk music and he wanted to be in this band and I'm sure he wants to go be in his band. But instead he's living in a white picket fence, nice house, and it's not the life he imagined for himself, that sort of thing. And he doesn't want to be in that relationship anymore. And there's a scene in the movie where he tells Juno that he's going to leave Vanessa. And she's like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to leave her to just be with the... She gets really mad because she's like, I thought this baby was going to have, like, two loving parents. And now you're telling me, like, I'm going to put her with, like, this, you know, single mom. All of us... Like, she gets mad. She feels betrayed. But... You know, they have this moment where she, like, it's prior to that. It's the moment prior to that where he, like, she kind of opens up to him about everything and he hugs her. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's when it feels really inappropriate.
Yeah.
Because then he's kind of like, how do you think of me? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, what are we doing?
I was before this.
Oh, you can pick up on it before. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was inappropriate just the fact that he was working from home and she came by
and hung out and for hours.
And hung out with her.
Watch movies and stuff.
That's already inappropriate.
Yeah. Yes. It's like, this should be a father-daughter relationship, not...
Right.
It's also sort of commenting on, we consider... being pregnant and going through pregnancy as an adult stage in your life. Yet she is, by all accounts of society, a child who is capable of going through it. And it blurs lines in some ways and is really inappropriate. But the best part is, like, that's not how she sees any of this at all. And then she's kind of like, ew, gross. Wait, what? What's happening? Like, you're leaving your wife? Like, you know.
She's more mature than him.
Yeah, like, what the hell is wrong with you? And she gets really pissed. Mm-hmm. And she writes a letter or whatever and then leaves. And she meets Polly back at school. And... basically confesses her love to him, like, and I think he was maybe just waiting. He definitely seemed like he's definitely not the confrontational type, and she absolutely is the one to, like, make the move. And
he's also like a kid, right?
I mean, I keep forgetting, like, these are teenagers. So they decide, like, yes, and he's gonna be there with her through the pregnancy. And it is revealed at the end of the movie that after the baby is born, that Vanessa comes to the hospital and she gets the baby. It's a boy, and she's going to be the adoptive mother. And they reveal that the angry note that Juno left was to Vanessa. And it wasn't angry at all. It says, if you're still in, I'm still in. And
she framed it and put it in the baby's room.
She framed it and put it in the baby's room.
Ugly crying.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the scene where she's holding the baby and Alice and Janie's character, Bren, comes in, Juno's stepmom, and she just, Jennifer Garner looks at her and she's like, how do I look? And she's like a mother. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so perfect. And she's also like scared shitless. And I'm like, and I'm like, yes, this is very accurate. Mm-hmm. And the movie ends with Juno and Polly playing guitar, hanging out in the summertime, continuing their relationship. I thought this was excellent. I cried like four times. And this was way better than it's actually better than I remember it.
Me too. I thought the same thing.
I remember thinking it was good, but this ended up being better than I remembered it.
Yes.
I really loved it. So, I agree. What were your thoughts about Juno, and what were your thoughts about how the pregnancy process was portrayed in here? Maybe even compared to Knocked Up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm so glad we picked this movie. When I added this movie to the list of movies that we're going to watch for the podcast, I did it because I remembered, you know, the topic of teenage pregnancy and adoption, and I thought those were two important topics to cover in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But once I watched the movie again, I realized that there's so many layers of parenting in this movie.
Yeah.
Because I totally forgot about the aspect of Juno's parents. Yes. Also, and how they handled her pregnancy.
They were great, and by the way.
They example of great parenting.
Yeah.
In this movie. But you also see like it's not just about the adoption process, mm-hmm. but I also thought it was good to see the perspective of the adoptive parents,
mm-hmm.
and whether you, doesn't matter how you become a parent, that's a huge life change.
Absolutely.
And it affects people differently. And for, you know, the adoptive mom, she was ready for it, and she was prepping everything for the arrival of this child,
mm-hmm.
While her partner was not.
Clearly communication issues.
Clear communication issues. But I think it's important to portray that in movies because that's reality. That actually happens. And I think that sometimes movies portray becoming a parent as, you know, rainbows and butterflies and everything's mm-hmm. great. When in reality, like I said, it's a huge life change and you have to adapt to it. And some people can't handle it. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that those aspects of the movie that I forgot came back. And I was like, yes, this is great.
Absolutely.
I
almost forgot to mention there's obviously the dynamic because Juno, as you noted, is a kid herself. And mm-hmm. you see things, not frequently, but often you'll see them through the lens of Bren and Mac, and mostly Mac, but they also give Bren some time too. Like there's a great scene when they do the ultrasound mm-hmm. as well, where she feels like the ultrasound technician is maybe talking down to them because
of
the teen pregnancy thing. You've got her dad who is like, God, you're such a dumbass, but is supportive of her and is going to help her no matter what. It's like, hey, we are in the situation now. So mm-hmm. we are going to, you know, but he never, you know, he's like, you were dumb, but it's never like, that's not the narrative for him as the dad. It's like, right. You did a dumb thing. And therefore I'm going to constantly remind you mm-hmm. and drive you down and like dig you into a hole because of it and keep reminding you of the huge mistake you made. Like, you know, mm-hmm. it's like you made a mistake. This is a mistake, but it's been made. So all mm-hmm. we can do now is take the logical next steps forward and we're going to get through it together. And mm-hmm. that, like, ladies and gentlemen, that is how you do it. Like,
yeah.
Other people may have some philosophies on parenting. I would disagree with them, mm-hmm. though. To me, that's the golden rule. Your kids yep. are going to make a mistake. It's going to happen because you've made yep. mistakes and your parents 100%. Made mistakes. And yep. everybody who's ever lived has made mistakes. So they're going to make them. Mm-hmm. And the only thing you can do, and it's really hard because there's this urge as a parent where you want them to have like a perfect batting average. You want them to make zero mistakes and you feel like, like I made mistakes, but you know what? That's okay. Like now I know the mistakes so I can warn them. Like, you know, it's like I've been to the future and like I can warn you about the mistakes exactly. so you don't make them. The cruel reality that I've discovered is, and this isn't just because I have a really deep curiosity for all things multiversal, but it's like whenever you have a kid, they exist alongside you, but on a slightly parallel existence from the one that you exist on.
Yep.
You're both running through an obstacle course. And you're like, ah, like, the kids are so lucky I'm here because I can look back and be like, hey, watch out for the logs.
Yeah, or, you're trying to knock off their obstacles.
Yeah, like, there's barbed wire, there's a barbed wire fence coming up. Like, you know, yeah. You can shout back to them. But what you don't realize is that their obstacle course looks a little bit different from yours. Mm-hmm. It's not completely different. Like, they want you to believe sometimes. Yep. They want to try to tell you, like, you don't know what it's like. And that's not true. We know what most of it is like. But, you know, we don't live like we lived in the 90s. And right. they grew up in a different time. So things are going to be different.
Very different.
And they're going to be different. They're going to be different enough that we're not going to be able to prevent every mistake from happening. Even the ones that we feel like are easily avoidable.
And I feel like sometimes parents also feel like their kid makes a mistake, it's a reflection on them.
Yes.
And that's not always true.
No, like it's not.
Just, you know, they're human. They're going to make mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, and if it is, the only thing that you should be doing is reflecting on yourself, not on them.
Right.
Like, if you feel like this reflects on you poorly, don't punish them for that. Like, be introspective. Think about what you could have done better. Don't beat yourself to death over it. But, like, because as parents, we're going to make mistakes parenting. It's just how it is. Like, it's unavoidable. You just do your best.
Yep.
You know, you may have a child that doesn't become a pregnant teen, but that doesn't mean they're not going to have any screw ups. Like stuff could happen. They might not have a screw up until they're an adult, but screw ups will happen. And there's this desire to try to avoid it, but and you know, fight it as long as you can fight it. But when the thing actually happens, whatever that thing is, don't bury them 6 feet under for it. You can't do that. Like, it's not gonna fix anything. All you can
do. Yeah, people. I feel like you have to like think about how you would like people to react to your mistake, right?
Yeah,
you don't want someone to keep digging on it and remind you every day of the mistake you make. So you don't want to do it to your kids either.
All you can do, and it doesn't matter like what the level of severity is. The rule maintains the same. All you can do is take steps forward, whatever those steps would be. And in this case, he's like, okay, you want to give this baby up for adoption, then we're going to make sure you get, you know, you're going to have your doctor's appointments. You're going to make sure this is a healthy baby. We're going to be there with you. Please don't ever do this again. Like, you know, things like that. And I thought it was just an excellent example. I can imagine watching this and feeling like, I bet anybody would wish like Bren and Mac McGuff were their parents. Because it's just, and also just because J.K. Simmons, like, who wouldn't want J.K. Simmons to be their dad? although to be fair, I did just watch a miniseries in which J.K. Simmons was Chris Evans' dad. But he was a murderer and a rapist. So
okay,
I guess I wouldn't want him to be my dad in that scenario.
No,
but for the most part, he seems like a really nice guy. And in real life, I'm sure he's a swell guy. But yeah, I thought they were excellent. This really, I mean, other than the beginning where the dialogue just felt really bizarre to me. I mean, I watched this when it came out as kind of a more youthful version of myself back in 2007. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know anybody who talks like this.
It does, like, you had a really good point that it does feel like you're hearing your friends talk. Like, it's just,
oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
like your high school friends, like, yeah.
Also, for some reason, my favorite comedy line in this was when she goes to call somebody and it's kind of garbled and she's like, sorry, it's my hamburger phone.
Yeah, it was the abortion clinic.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just like, sorry, I'm on my hamburger phone. Yes. Which is literally like a hamburger that opens up into a phone, like a plastic hamburger.
And that always makes me jealous because I remember growing up, I wanted that phone.
Like, who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
I always wanted that phone. Maybe one day I will still get it.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you like didn't at least take a peek on eBay to see.
Oh, I bet it's like $5,000 on eBay.
Pristine inbox, sealed hamburger phone. $5,000 or best offer. Yes. okay, so final thoughts on Juno as a movie. But what would you give the movie, and then what would you give its portrayal of parenthood and the pregnancy process, all of that stuff?
I mean, I do want to say that for the pregnancy process, I don't think that we got a lot of...
We didn't get a ton of it.
We didn't get a ton of it. We did get, you know, the fact that she was uncomfortable and, you know, eating certain things. But it wasn't, like, the main thing in the movie.
No.
And we didn't also see, like, the birthing process completely.
Not fully, no. But it felt more realistic than Knocked Up, though.
Yes, it did. But one of the scenes that actually made me cry was after birth, that she's, you know, laying in bed, the bed crying.
Yeah.
And that made me cry because, like I said at the beginning, you know, I've never gone through a process of, you know, adoption from either side of the process. But I do have given birth. And
you put yourself in the shoes of...
Yes. And the fact that she, you know, she didn't even see the baby. Like, she gave birth and the baby was taken away.
And it was a little boy.
It was a little boy. And, but you also, like, in that moment, have so many hormones running through your body to make you bond with the baby.
Yeah.
That for her not to have that, I cannot even imagine how that must have felt. Mm-hmm. So... Big props to women that have gone through that, because that's very intense. Mm-hmm. I can imagine that being very intense. So for that, I give that aspect of the movie.
Yeah.
I would give it a 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
And I give the movie a 4.5 too.
Yeah.
There are some things that, I'm not giving it a 5, just because we didn't see... There are some things about the process that were not expanded on. So it still gives that illusion of pregnancy not being what it is.
Yeah.
but I thought it was excellent otherwise.
Yeah. I thought the movie... I gave the movie a 4.5 as well. I thought it was excellent. I'm really torn. I feel really, I think I'm probably going to do maybe 4.75 about the portrayal of parenting in this. So much of, and it's associated, I guess it's associated elements. So much of it felt like the only thing that was kind of off about the abortion clinic to me was the lady at the desk. Like, nobody was like that. Nobody was like, "You want a free condom?"
She was also like a kid.
Yeah, she was. She's like, they've got flavors, and I'm like, "What are we doing?" Although it should be noted that most abortion clinics are not, that's not what they do. They're usually, you know, like a Planned Parenthood or whatever, which is usually a family planning place where people don't go there just for that. They go there for prenatal care, and they go there for
family planning.
Yeah, and sexual health, like birth control and condoms and things like that. So they are accurate. It's just like the person there was kind of weird. But outside of that, so much of it just felt very on point. The parent, like Juno's parents, were just really they did not feel like fake good parents. They just felt like real actual good parents. So I think but you know, a lot of the, like you said, we didn't get full glimpses of a lot of it. It was kind of partitioned off to focus on various things, which, you know, I get it for the narrative of the movie. They didn't want to spend too much time in one place or another, and of course they had to get that little creepy side story in as well. Still, I remember when it started happening in the movie, I'm like, wait, what? I didn't. I don't remember this. And then it's like, oh, I do remember this. What? Yeah. Ew.
Yeah, I did remember it, but I did not remember it was Jason Bateman.
Yeah. I didn't remember it being so creepy. Right. Anyway, I'm giving the parenting aspect 4¾. I thought they did a really fantastic job. Okay.
Yeah.
We have our next film picked out.
And before we say about anything about the next movie, I just want to say something just to clarify.
Okay.
And we are referring to Juno as she, her, because we're referring to the character.
Of course. Yeah,
we're
not
trying to misgender Elliot Page.
No, of course. And I made, not only did I make sure to note that it is starring Elliot Page, but I also like that anywhere the movie is being shown, their name is still listed as Elliot Page. It is listed as Elliot Page anywhere you look. You can watch it on Hulu or Disney Plus, and his name is listed there. So yeah, absolutely. No, we're just referring to Juno. I wanted to go out of my way. I wanted to go out of my way to not like dead name Elliot or any of that stuff. So yes. But yeah, he was awesome in the movie. It's God, it's such a great movie. Anyway, I'm glad we watched this.
Yes.
I'm glad I was forced to pull this from my hidden away DVD collection. Now I may need to upgrade it. I feel like I'm going to want to watch it again. It's, yeah, I felt...
This is a movie that it needs to be watched often.
Yeah, it holds up so well.
It holds up.
I was very surprised. Yeah. Okay, well, the goal for the next movie we're going to watch is to see how well it's held up. I have mixed feelings about how well it's going to hold up, but we'll find out. Before we announce what it is, I'll let everybody know that you can head on over to cinemageekly.com to check out the archives of the show. And of course, this, like all of our other podcasts, are listener supported. And if you like what you hear and you would like to help support the podcasts, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. We have the merch store, geeklymerch.com. Links for those will be in the show notes for this episode. And of course, you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Pocket Casts. Anywhere you find a good podcast, just search for Unscripted Parenthood, hit subscribe, and that way you can join us next time where we will talk about the 1993 family comedy, Mrs. Doubtfire.